We skip class, go to the library, read up on the tutorials, write the programs in Jotters, compare notes, keep going back, keep iterating over, and then we see how it goes. On Friday nights, when we were given the chance to use a computer lab in our school, we'd run these programs we had written in Jotters on Pentium 2 computers. The thrill of seeing the results show up on a screen, that feeling is unmatched. I don't know, but there's nothing that can match that.
Hello and welcome to Developers Journey, the podcast shining a light on developers' lives from all over the world. My name is Tim Bourguignon, and today I receive Bubunyo Navo. Bubu is a software developer from Ghana, an administrator at Dev Congress, the largest developer community in Ghana. He chronicles his life journey and rants about software development, business management, and tech community building on his blog at 5error.com. Bubu, welcome to Dev Journey.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. And I'm going to tease you right at the beginning. At the top of your Twitter timeline, there's a video of you, I assume, almost doing a backflip on the beach. There's this comment. This basically sums up my year 2018. So I have two questions for you. The first one is your back all right? Uh-huh. And the second one is, what's the story behind that comment?
Yeah. So the pre-question to that, to pre-case actually, is yes, that is me trying to do a backflip. And your first question, my back is fine. I didn't sustain any life-altering injuries. I was a bit shaken at the end, but yeah, nothing I couldn't get out of. So, to the story. So the backflip is actually in Keta, in the Volta region of Ghana. So I've been doing backflips since I was a kid, and I thought, maybe I still have it. So let me try to see how it goes. Then I tried it and it didn't work. So the laughter in it is from some of my very close friends. One thing I enjoy is making people laugh, whether it's at me or something I said. So yeah, the backstory to what happened in 2018, you know, it was one of those things where you have everything planned. You're going to do this first, and then do this next, and then do this the next thing after. I sort of had my entire 2018 mapped out, but then life happens, and everything just goes how it wants to go. So, yeah, that is the backstory to it. Yeah, but we move. We move is more of my phrase for... We get ourselves and then we just carry on. So,
how is 2019 panning out? Do you intend on doing a fail backflip again, or this one will be successful?
I plan on trying one. I think this one will be successful because I will better plan for it. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but yeah. hopefully that will go bad. The laughter you see in the you hear in the background is from Tino. She's in Zimbabwe.
Okay. And listeners, if you're in need of contagious laughter, just watch the video with the sound, and you just cannot not smile while looking at it. Your friend there is laughing so hard. this is absolutely fantastic.
That is Tino being Tino. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So let's roll back a few years. Where and when did your developer's story start?
So my developer story started when I was in junior high school. I think that would be 2006. So a friend of mine, his mom got him a desktop, and I used to go to his house to design, use Paint, Microsoft Paint. I could draw, so I just transferred my knowledge as an artist onto Paint, and then it was really working for me, and I thought I could get used to it. So I went there every evening, got back from school around 4 p.m., went to sit at the computer, would draw. And before we know it, the sun is gone and the moon is out. Then my friend's mom would be like, doesn't your friend need to go home? It's late and stuff like that. That is my cue to go home. That was my first encounter with computers. After that, my dad got me my own desktop because he didn't like the idea of me going out. Then I got games on it. I played for a bit. Then I got bored. Then I started editing some of the configuration files for the games. And I realized that, if you change this, cards become bigger or something changes and your game becomes better. One of the main games I remember tweaking heavily was Midtown Madness. I don't know if people still remember that game. That's all I remember about the game, the name. Everything else I've forgotten. I played around a bit with Midtown Madness. And not long after, I went to senior high school. Then that is where things sort of took off. Because in my senior high school, there was a computer club. Joining it was one of the first things I did when I got to high school. It was a group of very like-minded people who talked about computers. And we shared stories, tutorials, what to learn, stuff like that. I always wrote them down so that when I come home, I come and practice what I had learned. But while I was there, I picked up my first programming language, which was QBasic. So essentially, we had about 6 programming books in our library. And there was this book that had a QBasic tutorial in one of the sections. So we would skip class, go sit in the library. That's me and 2 of my friends. We skip class, go to the library, read up on the tutorials, write the programs in Jotes, compare notes, keep going back, keep iterating over, and then we see how it goes. On Friday nights, when we were given the chance to use a computer lab in our school, we'd run these programs we had written in Jotes on Pentium 2 computers. The thrill of seeing the results show up on a screen, that feeling is unmatched. The ability to type instructions into a computer and then have the computer spit out some feedback in a way that you had envisioned. Up to now, one of the thrills, you cannot emulate that anywhere. After high school, I went to uni. I studied computer engineering. That's when I started taking things seriously. But I didn't start active software development. Then I was more into hacking, penetration testing and stuff like that. Because, hacking seems cool. In the movies, people hack computers. And then you see them doing all the cool stuff. So, I also wanted to be a hacker. I started hacking. I got my first laptop. And the first thing I did was remove Windows completely and then put that back. Up to this day, I've never gone back to Windows. I don't regret my decision. Windows was all the rage in the day. I downloaded some CEH, Certified Ethical Hackers, tutorials from the internet. I was going through, but I couldn't understand anything they were saying. While I was doing that, my friends were sort of making money on the side. They were building just normal websites and then charging some money. Meanwhile, I was sitting behind my computer saying that I was hacking and nobody was paying me. I mean, I got some requests for hacking jobs. Guys wanted me to hack the Facebook accounts of some of the girls, some of their girlfriends. People wanted me to change their grades in the computing system in the school. People wanted me to hack Wi-Fi passwords. Those were among some of the common jobs. But other than my skills were not up to any of those. So I sort of switched course. I didn't sort of. I switched course. Like, wait, I can't be doing this and getting requests that I can't fulfill. All my friends build websites and make money. Then in third year of uni, after doing playing around a bit, I took up active software development. And I've been doing that ever since. This is about a brief summary of my introduction to software development.
Nice. Tell us about this change of course between hacking and then in your third year at the university, going to development. How did it feel like?
I don't know if there was an actual transition. Software building websites was all the rage. People wanted websites for whatever reasons they could come up with, and they were willing to pay. And basically, my decision was I can build websites, and I like this penetration testing stuff, but I'm not getting anywhere. Why don't I just make some extra bucks by building websites? So I built the first website. Was good. Then I went back to penetration testing. Then I got referred. Then the jobs kept coming. So it was more of a slow transition and a very, I would say, very unintentional one. But that's where I landed at the end of the day. I mean, people do penetration testing in Ghana. But at the stage that I was, I think one of the main things I was lacking there then was who was I going to do penetration testing with? None of my friends were into penetration testing. They were all building websites. So I sort of veered off that path and towards software development.
So at some point you decided to put all your effort in honing those skills in software development and not the penetration testing skills anymore, right?
Yeah.
And how did that go?
I'm still doing software development, so I think it went well. I got paid some good monies to build some websites. Back in the day, it was PHP. One of the first websites I built was for a startup that I wanted to create. It was called BuyChow. So the problem I actually identified was a lot of people on campus were trading among themselves. And the most common, the website we're using to trade among ourselves was Tonaton.com. It was a basic classifieds website where you go list your items and then people call you. And then you agree to meet up and then exchange services, basically money for an item. So I bought a few items of Tonaton. Among them was hard disks, RAM, and stuff like that. And I realized that most of the time, when I met the people at the other end, it was 3 out of 4 occasions. It was somebody from campus. We were meeting outside campus because we thought this person is probably not on campus. So we'll both leave campus to a remote location outside campus, exchange items, and then sort of get on the same bus and then come to campus. Like, that didn't make sense to me. So I was thinking, why don't I build a simple classified service like the one I was using, but this time, localize it for campus so that instead of having locations like I'm in Kumasi or listing cities, people could list the hostels and their dormitories and wherever they were staying on campus so that you could easily walk to those hostels or the dormitories and then get your items. One thing I also figured out was because it was only on campus, I could just easily market in this defined locality, and marketing would be far less easier and cheaper. I'm using the internal ecosystem, the campus bars and stuff like that. So yeah, those are the two main things that drove me to develop my first website. That was called BuyChow. And then I wanted to expand it for 2 other universities, that is the University of Ghana and then University of UMass. And then what I did was I cloned these websites. I built them using Joomla. I had some experience with Joomla from high school. I cloned these websites and I created 3 EC2 instances to host each version of the app. I just went in to change colors and logos and stuff like that. In hindsight, I wouldn't do it. I would do it differently. That helped me get noticed on campus. Like, people were like, okay, who's the developer of this website? And people wanted me to develop similar websites for them. I had a graphic design background from high school. So it really helped with the aesthetics of most of my website. And I think that was one of the things a lot of people appreciated. As much as people were writing software, not a lot of people were combining graphic design or the aesthetics part of design or incorporating it into their work. I think that was one of the main things that got me jobs.
Combining skills is always very important to be able to bring two different domains together and be at the sweet spot between the two of them.
It always is. I think that is one of the, when it comes to software development, that is one of the most powerful ways to get ahead. Combining experiences from different domains outside of software development.
You said this was your first startup. Did I get that right?
Yes, it was.
Does it mean there's a second one coming?
There was a second startup that started in field on campus. So when I started that, I didn't have any business experience. All I knew was there was a gap and I wanted to fill the gap or develop something to fill the gap based on my own experience. When it failed, I sort of realized that there was something missing, but I couldn't really put my hand on what was missing. I knew we needed to do marketing. I knew we needed to figure out the business. We needed to figure out finance, funding, and all of that. But back then, I didn't even know that these were the words for it. I just knew that this could be done better. There was something I was missing. So this sort of led me on a journey of enlightenment, seeking enlightenment. This is the Confucius part of my journey. So in searching, one day I went to class and a friend of mine told me that there was a hackathon happening in Accra. My university was in Kumasi. Kumasi to Accra is about 4 hours bus ride, 4 to 5 hours. There's nothing serious happening in school. Why don't we go see what this hackathon is about? So we took a bus, came to Accra, and then came for a two-day hackathon in MEST. So MEST is a meltwater foundation. What they do is take people in, train them in developing software and building a business around the software that has been developed, and then funds some of these ideas, the most promising ones, and then people go on to build these startups. So immediately I got into the hackathon, I saw people talking about software and talking about business in a way that I'd never heard before. They were able to understand the impact of their decisions on product, how marketing was had an impact on the product that they wanted to launch, how business decisions were going to shape what the product would look like, how customer experience was going to shape products. And for me, it was like light bulb go off, because for a very long time, I figured out that I was missing something, and the way people spoke about software and business, that's when I realized that, okay, or this is what I want to do. So I applied to MEST, and then I got in, and then it was a one-year program. So in MEST, the program focuses on three main things. There's the technology part, there's the business part, and then there's the communication part. Business teaches you how to build financial models, how to create slides, slides was for communications, unit economics, marketing, anything that had to do with running a business. And communication was how do you communicate what you are doing to parties that are listening, it being investors, it being partners, it being customers. We did that for a year. It was really intense. I think it's one of the best decisions I've made in my life, outside deciding to flip in Kita. So I got in, and then after the program, we sort of came up with a startup idea called AF Radio. Went through many, a lot of iterations, but essentially, we were building services to help radio get their businesses online and to be able to monetize properly. A lot of that had come from the fact that I'm really into music. I enjoy listening to music, and radio is one of the places where we discover music. And for me, the radio experience was always broken, since that there were too many ads, there were too many radio stations. You couldn't really search these radio stations. And if there was something interesting, you could never really get come back to the radio station and then hope to find these shows. So at the core of our product, to consumers, the main selling point was, if you miss your favorite radio show, you can just come back to AF Radio and then listen to a pre-recorded session. And then you don't have to worry about missing your favorite radio show. Rest assured that if you fall asleep or if you are in a meeting, you can just come back and then find this radio program that you missed. I think one of the things we did in testing that assumption was, so I found a radio station. Before all of this, we were sort of marketing it as another tuning, but we weren't getting traction. And people told us that it would be nice if they could listen to past episodes. So I didn't really know if integrating the playback session into the app was going to be a good idea. So what we did was we got radio shows from one of the radio stations in the country, which was on SoundCloud, and we sort of hyperlinked them in the app. And then we ran two campaigns on Facebook. One, we think that getting to AF Radio and find and listen to interesting, discover new radio shows around your interest, blah, 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 stuff like that. And then the other one was simply, did you miss your radio and did you miss your favorite radio show? Just come back into AF Radio. We have it recorded and then you can listen. So we measured the traffic around both ads. For shows that you couldn't find recordings for, there was a button where you could click request for recording. Request for recording wasn't anything. It was just a button for us to track how many people were interested in which particular radio shows. So we launched the campaigns and then we monitored the traffic or the reach of the campaigns, and we realized that the one that had the message of playback was reaching people in far better than the one that just had the Discover radio shows. So that was when we decided to build the playback functionality extensively. First version of it was in Python, developed by me. That was some of the most difficult programming I had ever done in my life, using gevents and Celery and RabbitMQ. I still think about some of the programming I did back then for that, and I think I get PTSD. So we later changed that infrastructure to Golang, and that was fine. The Python was terrible at scale, and the Golang one scaled nicely. So yeah, that became my second startup.
Nice. And if you had one learning to pick out of this second experience, what would you want to highlight?
Okay, so one of the things I learned was, or I figured out was, building a software product is about value. And in this part of the world, value is mostly attributed to money. So are you making money using for someone's business or people using your software products? If you are not making money, how are you saving them money? If you're not saving them money, are you saving them time? And are they able to translate that time into money in a way that is straightforward to them? At the end of the day, what I realized was whatever you are doing, if you can draw a straight line from your services to the monies of your target customers, you have a sure hit. If you have to go through hoops and go around and keep on explaining how the value you are delivering tends to money for your customers, they are most likely not going to hear a lot of it, because in Africa, consumer business is not a major hit as much as B2B or enterprise. And because businesses are looking for ways to save themselves money and reduce overhead. So that's like low-hanging fruit that a lot of people with their startups can capture.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But these are some of the most stubborn people, because when you start to talk and then you start to drag on, then you start zoning out. Like, what do you do? I do this. How does it save me money? How does this help me save money? Or how does this help me make money? If you go on to explain for more than 5 minutes, best believe they're not going to hear anything you said.
Yeah, but if you flip that around, that means if you can articulate your marketing message around this, then you have a chance at being successful right away.
Yeah. I think that is the other aspect to the value. As much as you are able to deliver value, if you are not able to communicate the value you deliver effectively to whoever is listening to you, obviously you are not going to be able to sell. But at the end of the day, I see people in this ecosystem come up with products and services, and the value to them is probably clear, but drawing the line from value to money for target customers is most often they have to go on and explain. Maybe we can chalk it down to communication of what the value is. But at the end of the day, if you are able to deliver value, you should be able to articulate it in a very simple and straightforward way.
I would like to switch gears a little bit. In the bio I read from you, it says that you are an administrator at Dev Congress, a community. How did you enter the community in this community in Ghana, and why did you decide to take on some responsibilities in there?
My entry into Dev Congress was never something I planned. When I started programming, one of the things that I found difficult in uni was finding someone to ask questions about what I was doing. Was I doing the right thing? If I wasn't doing the right thing, how should I go about it? There was never anyone around who could answer my questions effectively. Obviously, I had friends, but we all had the same questions. And we all had to try, and then when someone chances on a solution, we sort of shares it, and then that's we all pick it up, then we move ahead. What it did was it took me a very long time to get from point A in programming to point B. When I got outside of uni, I started talking to people who had industry experience. I realized that some of the answers they were giving me, if I had gotten them maybe second year or third year of uni, I would have advanced far faster than I did when I was there. Okay, so that is about mentorship for me. That's when I realized the value of mentorship. Then I heard about Dev Congress from a few friends, and it was about meetups and going to meetups, hearing people talk. And in Dev Congress, One of the good things was we have people in there with more than 10 years experience. And we have people in there who are just beginning programming. And anytime people ask questions, there was always this atmosphere, or Dev Congress created a deliberate environment of beginners should be able to ask people who are far advanced questions. And then people who are far advanced should be able to answer these questions in a very effective way for it to be worth, I wouldn't say not necessarily worth the while, but yeah, beginners should ask questions and then seniors should be able to answer them. Now, what did this was, did this, did, or what I thought about it was, this decentralized the whole idea of mentorship. Because most of the time when people think about mentors, they say they point to one single man or one single woman and say that she or he is my mentor. And the effort that goes into mentoring someone, especially in this part of the world, when you're not getting paid for it, is a lot. You have to take time off, look at assignments, help people figure out what they are doing, be on a call and talk to them. And people don't have time for that. So in Dev Congress, it was more a community effort at mentoring large groups of people. And I immediately bought into that and I said, okay, so this is what I should have had. If I didn't have it, how can I advance, how can I help advance Dev Congress and get it to a place where it would be far easier for people to get in, ask questions, and then get mentored without necessarily going through the traditional way of I'm looking for a mentor who's willing to mentor me. So that's how I got into Dev Congress. I think one of the first things I did at Dev Congress at our meetups was I did a talk. That was in 2017. After then, I was doing Android development actively for my startup. So I had gotten into reactive extensions, and then I had a previous talk at a Google event where I spoke about reactive extensions using Java. And then one of the administrators of Dev Congress, Andrew, he was like, he enjoyed the talk and he would be glad if I could give it at the next Dev Congress event. I was like, sure, why not? I didn't know any Java as at then, and Dev Congress wasn't an Android or Java event. So I sort of picked up some JavaScript, then converted my slides from Java into JavaScript using RxJS, and then I did that talk. Then since then, I helped organize meetups. Helping organize meetups wasn't something that was assigned to me. It was more, I enjoy these meetups. I want more of it to happen. So how do I go about it? Spoke to other existing administrators. And he said, yeah, if you want to organize a meetup, you go ahead. We'll back you as best as we can. So I go about looking for sponsorship for the events. Most of the time, the only sponsorship we need is to be able to buy pizza and some coke. That's about all the money we needed. It wasn't too expensive, but it easily got expensive because the meetups got good. Venues were always given to us for free, most of the time by people who had an event to give out. And our selling point mainly to them was, you guys do something that is centered or geared towards developers. We can pack this place with over 80 developers, and then you can get to sell to them for 10 or 15 minutes. Depending on whatever product that event space was selling. If it was a workspace, they could sell the developers come and work here. If it was a university, the universities, the computer science students get to connect with industry experts who were on the ground for the meetups. These meetups easily grew and easily became expensive. I mean, at one of our meetups, we planned for about 80 people and we had about 150 people. Yeah, that's the kind of success in Dev Congress that scared me the most. You have 150 people come up and you've only planned for 80 pieces. So some of the administrators, we have to take money from our own pockets, run out, get pieces, get more drinks, and then get it back so that everybody's sorted. Everybody's energized for the next round of talks. Yeah. So that is how I got involved with Dev Congress. And then next thing I know, the other administrators decide to make me an administrator because I think I was doing a good job. But I only use my administration title for people to be able to know that if they want to be able to use the platform that Dev Congress has created. I mean, we have about 1,600 members right now, active on Slack. And if you want to take advantage, if you talk to me, there's a high chance we can get it to happen, whether you're in Ghana or not. Yeah, at the end of the day, I'm just an event organizer for Dev Congress and platform moderator.
Nice. Very nice story. Very nice story. The time box is running away from us. If you could go back in time and meet yourself when you were still doing this penetration testing, mm-hmm. and give yourself one advice, what would you say?
I don't know if I would change anything because I have a very peculiar outlook on life. So I don't believe in "I told you so's." I don't believe in looking back and figuring out what you want to change or what you would have changed. Because I think your current situations is a sum of all the actions you took and all the actions you didn't take. You might not like your situations, the current situation you are in, but at the end of the day, that is what you have to deal with and that is what you have to make the most of it. So I don't really know if I'll tell my self back then to change anything. One thing I do is I do leave notes for my future self. So what I do is most of the time when I'm going through difficulties, I write a letter to my future self and explain that this is what I'm doing and this is why I've taken these actions and it has backfired. But we still have life and we still have breath. So tomorrow we are going to take on new challenges. And then I hope I leave it for myself to find in the next maybe 5 to 10 years. I think I've done 3 of those. I don't think I'll tell my past self to do anything different. Just maybe, I don't think I would have told my past self to study any harder. I can't think of anything.
Fair enough. And the advice of writing to your future self, that's also very interesting. I need to think a bit more about that. That's a nice idea. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. So basically the idea is so because we have the tendencies of looking back and regretting our situations, most of the time we do it with a lot of context of the future and what has already happened. And then we regret things in the past that there was no way we could have had context or we would have known. We don't know that this is what is going to happen. And because we have the benefit of being in the future, we sort of tend to regret our decisions. So when you write a letter to yourself, you explain to your future self that this is why I took this decision. And hopefully your future self will be more lenient on you. Yeah.
That is very wise. Thank you. So, if the listeners wanted to contact you and get in touch with you, should they go over a Twitter or should they go over a Dev Congress? Where would be the better place to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so the two main places I hang out are Twitter and Dev Congress. If you interact with me on Twitter, I might be a bit slow in replying because I turned off notifications for Twitter on my phone. If you get in Dev Congress, which I think everybody should, if you're Ghanaian or if you have interest in the developer ecosystem in Ghana, just join Dev Congress. Go to slack.devcongress.org and create an invite for yourself. You can connect with me there. My username is Bubu, B-U-B-U. And I'm always ready to have a conversation about developer ecosystems, how to make things better, how to create opportunities for new developers and stuff like that. So
awesome. Is there anything you want to advertise or to want to plug in before we call it a day?
I have nothing to plug, but a friend of mine, his name is Kofi, he does this awesome YouTube series. He'll be angry if I don't plug it. So yeah, I'm plugging him. So youtube.com/KHOPHI. Yeah, go and watch his videos.
Well, do.
I think I've already said join Dev Congress. So join Dev Congress.
Yeah. Fantastic, Bubu. Thank you very much. Yeah. This has been a very fun listening to your story.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
And this has been another episode of Developer's Journey. And we'll see each other next week. Bye-bye.
Dear listener, if you haven't subscribed yet, you can find this podcast on iTunes, Google Music, Stitcher, Spotify, and much more. Head over to www.devjourney.info to read the show notes, find all the links mentioned during the episode, and of course links to the podcast on all those platforms. Don't miss the next Developer's Journey story by subscribing to the podcast with the app of your choice right now. And if you like what we do, please rate the podcast, write a comment on those platforms, and promote the podcast on social media. This really helps fellow developers discover the podcast and those fantastic journeys. Thank you.